You are listening to a podcast from Raritan Valley Community College.
I would like very much to welcome you, and I want you to know that I feel this is a really special program, and it was very kind of you to take from your busy schedules, and I know that sometimes it cuts into your lunch hour for you to join us. And it's been a difficult weekend for many of us, so I hope that this will be an opportunity for us to come together as community and share this, which is an uplifting program, I feel, in the long run. And at this moment, I would like to introduce our Dean of Multicultural Affairs, Dean Richelieu DeShield, who will officially welcome you.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. A special thanks to our organizer, Pepe Margolis, for bringing this important program to our attention and to the college community, and also to our panelists who took time out of their busy schedules today to be a part of this special program, and to our SGA members and student leaders who are co-sponsoring this event along with us. We really appreciate your time to be able to join us. I just bring you brief greetings on behalf of the college community. We gather here to remember the victims of September the 11th. Today we come together as a day of reflection, respect, and remembrance. Reflection on the lives that we lost that day, reflection on the resilience and the rebirth of our families, our community, and our country. Respect for the ordinary people that became heroes that day. Respect for our first responders who ran up the steps as many of us ran to safety. Remembrance for the 3,000 plus lives that perished that day and the lives lost after that day. Our mothers, our fathers, our brothers, our sisters, daughters, sons, friends, we will never forget.
And today we're going to see a documentary called Rebirth. I'd like to introduce to you Donna Gaffney, who will share with us the film. She worked very closely with the organization, with the producer who created this documentary. You're going to meet four people in this film that will touch your hearts and I think become, and I know that they almost feel like friends to me. And I've been told, Donna, that several of them have been on television over this weekend. So you're going to see some faces if you've been watching TV. Some of them have been now interviewed on the morning talk shows. And they're very humble people, very kind people. And I'm amazed at how open they are about their experience. So Donna, if you want to join me, she is the original TLC coordinator, founding member of the advisory board for families of September 11th. And I want you to know that she made a special trip to see us today. She just came in from Dallas, I think. She traveled
last week.
Yesterday was Washington. I mean, she's now traveling with this film. So it's amazing that we have the opportunity to screen it here. She's the coordinator of the Four Action Initiative. It is a curriculum entitled Learning from the Challenges of Our Times, Global Security, Terrorism, and 9/11 in the Classroom. And many teachers in New Jersey worked on this curriculum. It was officially launched July 14th at Liberty Science Center. And that's actually how I met Donna and was invited to screen this film, which I said belongs here in our community. So I'm going to turn this over to you, Donna, just to introduce the film, because I know we're all anxious to see it.
Okay, thank you so much, Pepe. It's wonderful to be here, and actually I'm a New Jerseyan, so I didn't come that far today, even though I did a lot of traveling last week. As Pepe described to you, this is a film that was created from really a director's vision, a director who had lost his own mother 6 months before September 11th, and struggled with and was curious about why people grieve differently. And he came to visit Ground Zero when he was in New York. He lives in Los Angeles. And he was here for a wedding, on the East Coast for a wedding. And as he visited Ground Zero, he was struck by what it looked like at that moment in 2001, 1 month later, and what it looks like, what it might look like in 10 years. And then he thought that there might be a way to also think about what the people looked like. This is what we call Rebirth the Early Years. It is from 2002 to through 2007, the full-length film is going to be aired on Showtime over this next month. That is about an hour and a half. What you're going to see today has four subjects in it. There are five subjects in the complete film. And any of you who saw 2020 on Friday night would have seen the story of Nick, and also Brian Lyons, who's not in this film but is in the larger film, is a large part of Steven Spielberg's Rising documentary, which is on Discovery. So this is powerful material you're going to see. We are all, I hope that many of you had a quiet day yesterday just to reflect, and it's very hard not to go back there. So if this becomes too tough, close your eyes, think of something else. If you need to, just sort of shut out for a moment. But it is a film ultimately about hope and resilience.
It's a discussion group after the program.
Yes, and we will have a discussion after the program as well. So let me make sure I see my AV person over there. I think he's okay.
It's right here.
So this was the first 6 years after the filming was done. The full film goes to 2009. But let me just tell you a little bit about these people now. This is Nick. He was 15 when his mother died in the terrorist attacks. And these are his quotes. Everyone heals in a completely different way. That he didn't know where he would, didn't think he'd be where he was now without going through all the steps of the process. And he thinks he landed on his feet. And he graduated from Yale, earned his MBA. He lives in Brooklyn and is the co-founder of 2Seed, an employee volunteering platform for corporations and foundations. So he has landed on his feet. Here's Tanya. She was engaged to Sergio, and Sergio was a firefighter and died on September 11th. She met Ray about four years later, and she says that she loves waking up again, but not after 4 hours sleep because she has two little ones. She has two little girls, ages 3 and 4. And I think one of her comments is the most poignant. I'll always grieve, but it doesn't stop me from living a life of joy. I think if we all embrace that, we'd be in much better. And this is Tanya and Ray on their motorcycle. And here's Ling. You didn't get a chance to hear all of her comic. You heard a little bit of it, but you can see the transition when she goes from being very hopeless to feeling like she can really deal with this. She had over 40 surgeries to correct the scarring from her second and third degree burns. And in the very beginning, she said, "People tell me I'm lucky," but then she didn't believe that for a while. But this is, at the very end when she says, "I think I am lucky." She lives in New Jersey with her husband and has two grandchildren. And very interestingly, her son did the primary caregiving for her, and her son also signed her up for this project. So how's that for a son knowing his mom? And she says she's glad that she's alive. And here's Tim. Tim lost two very close friends in the fire department at the FDNY, Terry Hatton, who you saw the sign being pulled off by his little girl, the cover to the sign, and Patty Brown, two of the most decorated fire department men in the fire department. He did retire in 2004. He campaigned for Rudy Giuliani. He worked for Homeland Security. And then he and his brother Chris, who is from the Rhode Island Fire Department, started a website called thebravest.com. And that brings, and they started it because they wanted to keep track of each other between Providence and New York City. And it's really quite a remarkable website. And he says that he is tired of living in that place of sadness and grief, and he wants to live in this place. And if you want to know any more, go to our website. If you want to see the whole film, which fills in all the details, you can go get it from Amazon. It's going to be on Showtime. And Tepe, you want to make this announcement?
Thank you. And yes, thanks to Donna's help, we'll be showing it here if you really would like to see the full version on October 24th at noon and again at 7. We'll show an hour-and-a-half version. On that day, we're also going to have an educators and community workshop about how to talk and teach about this, not just on September 11th. This comes up in various forms and various ways for many people at different times in the year. So I would like to invite the panel to come up, and if you could take the stairs on that side. I, while they're coming up, I hope you can appreciate as much as I did the value of this documentary, from its filming, from the participants, and how I know it was difficult for some of us, but they really endear themselves to us in their healing. To mention that when in my efforts to figure out who a panel would be, I never knew that I would find people in our own community who have experienced it and who are so special in their ability to share this. You met Donna, and she will answer questions if there's time for questions. We hope that she will answer any questions you have about the film, about the people in the film, about projects that are coming up. I also would like now to introduce one of my co-workers, Eva Fontanez. She is one of the members of our working community, because we looked for students, we looked for staff, we looked everywhere, and there it was, Eva. I remembered when we worked together that she talked about her niece. And so I'm going to let Eva tell her own story, and I see your sister Rose is here, and you feel free to add to it. But yes, Eva, you're going first.
Hi. My story is a little different because my niece, Debbie Reeves Santos, she was a FDNY EMT. She and her husband were first responders there, and her husband was going to be here today, but he had to work today. But he said that he will be, he called me today and he told me he will be attending the October 24th. She got cancer and after the 9/11, after inhaling all the toxic. And I remember well how she explained, you know, the pain and everything. And she left behind, she died on March 15th, 2006. But September 11th is always big in our family, in the Santos family, in the Reeve family, in the Rodriguez family, because we always remember her. And unfortunately, they don't read her name there. But there was one year after the year, after 2006, September 11th, 2006, one of her co-workers actually mentioned her when he was reading some other names, and he actually mentioned her. But she left behind a daughter and a little son, and her daughter is now 16, and the father is raising both of them. But, you know, the family has moved on a little, but it's always painful. And I know he has moved on. He loved her very much. He loves her still. And recently, we were at a family gathering, and he brought a girlfriend he has. And we were so glad because, you know, he has suffered so much. But I always remember her, and I actually have a whole, I always keep this book, and I always open it up. And I remember a little after 9/11, the FDNY, they were giving out special pins with the towers and the black ribbon. And I remember her giving us, the family members, pins of this. Little did I know that she died because of 9/11. And it's a whole lot of political things, which I don't like, all that mumbo-jumbo. I just know that right now she's not here because of 9/11. And not only the people that are mentioned on 9/11 died, but there are so many more that have died and are suffering because of 9/11. And
Thank you for sharing. I know it's not easy for you. And I'm sure that you and your family, you know, find this a very difficult time. And Rose, did you want to add anything?
Well, I was just going to say that she wasn't born. Right? She was there to have body parts. And very beginning, there was really nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. She said that she may have said that she was able to,
we found out that many people got ill this way. But your nephew is still living. That's her husband. And
he gets checked.
Right. Thank you. I now will introduce Terrence Hoban, who was a graduate, RVCC graduate, and he really was a student here on September 11th. I actually have to tell you how I know Terrence. He speaks for us at the Holocaust and Genocide Institute, and he speaks about his experiences in Rwanda. But I remembered somewhere along the way that he did mention having been a first responder. So when I called Terrence and I said, "Do I remember this?" And he said, "Yes." That he these are his words. "This was an unbelievable experience because I was a student at RVCC when this happened, and several classmates of Professor Roger Johnson, some people here might remember him, in the lab science class, they had lost family members in the collapse, and having responded to this event while being part of the RVCC student community was a powerful experience, because if I remembered, you told me that you went for 2 weeks with classmates and Professor Johnson. I wanted to reunite you. I was looking for him, but I understand he lives in Paris, France, and in Florida, so it was hard to get him here today, but I thought that would have been an amazing experience. So, Terry, I would let you share your experience then and now, but just so you know, Terrence has gone on to be a coordinator of University of Medicine and Dentistry, New Jersey's Emergency Medical Services. He is a 26-year member of the department serving as Newark Street paramedic and flight paramedic. He works with the New Jersey Emergency Helicopters Program, and for the past 16 years is a medic for the FBI's Newark Division SWAT team. Terry has responded to emergencies overseas, and I didn't know this, that you were in Iran in 1991 as part of Operation Desert Storm. There's so much I don't know about Terrence, and every time we meet, you always amaze me and impress me with how much you give back. So it's a wonderful pleasure to have you here today, Terrence. Thank you for taking time from work.
Thank you, Pepe, and partially sorry to not see Professor Johnson, but I got a C in that class, and I'm not sure if he'd be very happy.
You don't want to see him.
It wasn't basket weaving. It was to be part of the community was very challenging, and I can tell you that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people throughout our country that responded to that incident, and hundreds in this own county of Somerset that responded. And I'm sure there's probably colleagues in this room as well. It was surreal. We were going to a meeting that morning, and it was 10 o'clock meeting. And as you know, the chain of events started at 8:45 and continued on the rest of the day and culminated at 10:30 with the collapse of the North Tower. And we responded to that incident as best as we could. We threw helicopters at it, we threw personnel. And the sad part about it in the end was everyone was there to help, but there was no one to help because they had all died. And it was tragic. When you're a first responder, you want to help and you want to make a difference. And when there's no one to help, it's extremely difficult for you to move on from that point. Going back to Professor Johnson's class, I remember returning to class the following Monday. It was very difficult. We weren't really sure if we were going to have class. September 11th fell on a Tuesday, as everyone remembers, and there were people missing from the class. I was in the classroom also with another fellow police officer who was working to finish his degree up like I was. Mm. And we didn't know whether to come or not. It was in the evening. Most of us had been working all day over in New York City. I worked a little over 2.5 weeks at what was called the pile. And we brought and coordinated all the assets from the greater New York and New Jersey area into New York City to support the rescue workers that were trying to find survivors within the wreckage. And we returned that night. I'll never forget Professor Johnson standing before the class saying, this is an extremely difficult time for all of us to return. And he says, and I know how possibly this moment does not seem worth it. It doesn't have substance. There's too many thoughts going through our mind. And he held this model in his hand as he said it. He says, but somehow we have to move on. Somehow we have to struggle on. And he shared with us the loss of a fellow classmate who was waiting to hear the news of their family member who was lost in the rubble. And we forged on. That one moment in that class was irreplaceable. I can't tell you. I've seen a lot in my career, but to see a professor seize that moment here on this campus, it made me want to go back and work harder the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that. And you know, it's just it speaks so much for this organization, this institution, the people that work for it, and for all those that did respond. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have a student here at the moment, an RVC student, who was in fourth grade when her father was working in the towers, and he survived. So she's going to share Natalie Rodriguez.
Natalia.
Sorry, I don't have my glasses on. I was so sure to bring them. They're not in here. But, but in any case, she was amazed when we were working with the Student Activities Committee, and she came forward and said, you won't believe it, but I was in fourth grade. I have memory of this, and my father is living and has gone on to make a great deal of his life. So her memories then and now she'll share with you.
I just wanted to say that thank you all for coming, and it means so much to me and everyone up here, and definitely the remembrance of every family, it definitely does help. And to start off, my father was a computer programmer on the 64th floor of the second Twin Tower, and I remember distinctly when I used to live in New York, going into work with him and seeing all the different cubicles in his office. And you know, I went there around Christmas time and they gave out presents and stuff, and I remember that distinctly. And the day of 9/11, we just moved back to New Jersey from North Carolina, and he was just about to go back to his old job to see if there was any openings to try to get his job back. And he was in the building when my grandmother called and said, the first building is down. There's a plane went in. And of course, he already had figured it out. And they had to go on the emergency staircase with both hands on the shoulder of each other person and go down the stairs. And their heads were down and they were covered in soot. And I remember my father coughing up soot for a week after the attack. And after that, it was very hard for my father to find a job, because when you're in the computer programming fields, you need to always be on top of your game, always know what's the new technology. And the fact that my father is now out of a job, his job is now not happening. He was going from job to job, try to figure out what's going on with his assets, with what he does do best, which is work with people. And I remember he was a real estate agent, he worked for Cablevision. And also to remember that day when I was in fourth grade, my father picked me up from school. They did not tell us about it in school. They didn't have it on the news. They didn't have it anywhere. I had no idea what was going on. And my father picked me up from school. It was the middle of the school day. And I remember he was dirty. He was covered in just dust. And I was like, what's going on? What happened? And he didn't want to talk. He was just like, the Twin Towers fell. And when I figured that out, I was just like, what? They were, how can they fall? He didn't go into detail, but it was just, it was difficult for me to understand. And but it definitely, from the years to follow, it escalated to, you know, really hurt us financially, hurt my father. He lost a lot of friends that day. And he would say, when he would go down to New York to try to find jobs, he would say how the smell of the bodies really affected him. He lost a lot of friends that day, and he lost a lot of coworkers. And now my father is an assistant manager at a men's warehouse, doing what he loves, working with people every day. And one of his hobbies is men's fashion, so he does love that. And the company that he used to work for downtown in the Twin Towers now has a different facility. They salvaged what they could, and now they are back and running. And my father does work for them a couple nights a week downtown in the city. And that's what I have to say about 9/11 and how it affected me.
Thank you. And so you had personal stories from our own community, and we're very fortunate now to have on staff a licensed psychologist, Dr. Margaret Chan. She is on the panel as well, and she has 10 years of clinical experience in trauma work, developmental and health psychology. She is a Queens, New York native, now a New Jersey resident, and she completed her postdoctorate, worked at the University of Medicine and Dentistry in New Jersey. Terrence, you might have bumped into each other there. She continues to teach, supervise, and train students as a volunteer clinical assistant professor at the UMDNJ Department of Psychiatry and Family Medicine. So she earned her PhD in clinical psychology at the University of Toledo and a BA in psychology at SUNY. And I can't say it, Binghamton. There, got it. And we practiced that. And she joined RVCC in February of 2011 as a mental health counselor, and she's going to offer an opportunity to talk with her. I'll let you explain that if you'd like to.
Sure. I mean, this is the time that I would like the audience to share your own experiences and your reactions to the film. As Pepe said, I was a Queens native, and I did my bachelor's at SUNY Bing, and when September 11th happened, I was a college student like many of you. And as a college student, you are just shocked. And given that Binghamton was upstate, there were a lot of my friends and just not knowing where their family members were. And talk about avoidance. It was the quietest campus, just leaving. I had an 8 a.m. class, just like many of us do here, or it was a 7 a.m., I'm not sure. And you come out, and then it's deathly quiet. And at that time, there was no smartphone, cell phone. You couldn't text, even if you wanted to. It was sort of this, like, chunky black and white phones. And the cell phone wasn't working. It was one of the first things I noticed. And I felt this panic when someone said a plane hit the Twin Towers. And immediately brought me back to 1993, the World Trade Center. So we're getting bombed down at the bottom. And you were in disbelief, like it's like a movie happening. And I just remember all the friends huddling around each other saying, you know, where's your mom and dad? And there was like, oh, they're in City Hall or they're downtown Manhattan. And all the bridges were all closed. Transportation was down. Cell phones weren't working. So it was this panic, but it was a very quiet panic as a college student, not knowing what was happening. And you just didn't know where people were. Until much later. And so as we all checked in that each family member is okay, obviously we found out some people's family was not. And the first thing we did was the weekend we can go back to the city, just driving, you know, as a New York native, just driving across the George Washington Bridge. It was completely dark. The city was all shut out. It was black. And that was the first time it kind of hit you and seeing the reality of what has actually happened. What is beautiful about Rebirth is it talks about the experiences of regular people. I think all of us were affected by 9/11 in different ways, either directly with our family members, as service members, but also as residents of New York and New Jersey, just having such a memory of those towers embedded in our brain for so long, and then all of a sudden, it's not there anymore. So what was beautiful about the film has been this trajectory of how us as regular people, as just citizens and as inhabitants of the East Coast, just seeing what is happening, how that affected us. And 10 years later, yesterday was definitely a difficult morning, and sort of this automatic, I thought it was beautiful how our presidents, you know, Bush and Obama was able to say something and have two moments of silence for 8:46 a.m. when the first plane hit at 9:03. And talk about delayed grief, that was my first time just observing those two silences. So in a way, that was my sort of mini microcosm of my experience of 9/11. And each time, you don't think you're affected by it, but we have these mini triggers. You know, Rebirth is about grief, but it's also a traumatic grief. And we all have little triggers that take us back to 9/11. And for me, it was definitely, could not avoid it yesterday. And just having that moment of silence just was out of remembrance. And I found a quote from the book and a lot of the follow-up with the four people who was shown on Rebirth, and this is from a Holocaust survivor, and it says, you know, she said, this is by Elie Wiesel, because I remember, I despair, and because I remember, I have the duty to reject despair. And that sort of sums up how we move forward. And so it kind of makes you think about what's important, helps you think, you know, have I loved to the max? And what is the legacy that we all want to remember from all of this and what lessons have been learned? But it's also a time in this 10th year anniversary and this milestone for us to take that moment to let ourselves remember and grieve and each feel what our own emotional responses have been. And of course, as I was sitting here, I can hear the room, you know, just several of us just visibly being able to grieve, and some of us just quietly sitting. And we all have these different ways of reacting. So I wanted to open up to the audience members. What has it been like for you to watch the film? What does 9/11 look like emotionally and spiritually for each of you? And how does ordinary people recover from grief?
Can I just ask you a question? Did you want people to stay after to discuss this with you?
Yes. I mean, feel free to stay after. I was going to sort of do a discussion group. So for those of you who like to talk a little bit more personally, feel free to do so. If you want to sort of have your own reactions, feel free to stand up because I'll just, you know, walk around with the microphone.
I think in the interest of time, because people do have appointments and classes, mm-hmm. that if people would want to stay and debrief, she's available to you and to discuss some of these questions that she raised. And when Margaret referred to a book, this is a brand new book that came to my attention. It was just published this month, and it's called Project Rebirth. And Don, I'm sure you're aware of this.
I own several copies.
Exactly.
Yeah, we work with the authors.
Exactly. So I was so happy to see this, because if you want to read more about the people, how it evolved, and what the motivations for writing this, it's all in here. It would be very good to follow with some sort of book discussion, maybe as a community in the future. But in any case, that's the book we were referring to. And I don't want to take more of your time. I think there's been so much said of value. And just to thank a few departments, particularly student activities, for supporting this, for bringing students. I saw some students here who had to go to class, but they, I believe one of the departments sent us some students. And I think it was not easy for you to share, and I appreciate very much that you could and did. And particularly after a weekend of remembrance, it's time to move on. It's time to try and heal. It's just what it says is rebirth. And if you want to see the full-length film, there are flyers on the chairs. Welcome to join us October 24th. And that will be not just to teach it, how to talk about it. So
of course, Donna. We've now screened the film for a number of educational audiences. I'm a clinician, and I've worked for 10 years with the 9/11 community in every respect, to first responders, etc. But one thing we do know, that seeing a film like this has an afterlife. And you will find yourself thinking about it. You'll maybe go online and look a little bit more, see if you can understand a little bit more about it. And this is a time to take care of yourselves as well. So remember those comfort measures, that it's okay and it's natural to think about it afterwards, but process what it means to you and share with other people and be with people that you care about.
And